This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Hello, Kansas City. I'm Brian Noland here with my law partner, Malik James, and you're listening to Radioactive Kansas City, Radioactive Magazine. Today, we'll be speaking about race in the law, and because this is my first show and Malik's first show with Radioactive Magazine, we're going to briefly introduce ourselves to you. Malik?
Okay, my name is Malik James. I am 42 years old. I am currently a lawyer. I represent the Sly James firm. I'm a graduate here recently of UMKC Law School. And I should also say that I am a proud United States Marine. Hoorah.
And I'm Brian Noland. I'm also an attorney at the Sly James firm, where we practice personal injury, employment discrimination, and I also spend my time focusing on labor law. Today, we're going to be talking about inequality in the law, in particular, the fact that, as the American Bar Association has called it, the least integrated profession in the United States.
Indeed.
Malik is one of the few African-American attorneys, not only in Kansas City, but in the country. And today we're going to be talking about the experience of being a black attorney and the inequality that that produces in our society. The first question will be to Malik. Malik, can you describe a little bit of your experience, not only as one of the few black law students in your school, but also one of the few black attorneys in Kansas City?
Well, you know, first I want to state that it's not something that you wake up going, whoa, I'm going to start my day as one of the few black attorneys in the United States. So I want to make that clear. However, it becomes an issue when you find yourself listening to clients, when you find yourself being immersed with legal matters, and you find that there is inequality, not necessarily with black attorneys, but with potential black claimants and black clients. I can say this. I went to UMKC Law School, and in my 3 years as a student trying to get a law degree, I bumped shoulders and elbows with maybe six other black students. And oddly enough, and you know, this is somewhat dubious, but there were more Asian students in UMKC Law School. And this is a law school that's literally a stone's throw from a prolific black neighborhood. You know, so just seeing that, it's pretty clear that this is a matter of a lack of representation. You know, I'll say it simply, and I'll move it back to Brian. I would submit to you that, you know, a lot of us white folks or a lot of white folks have a lawyer in the family. They have grandpa or a sister or an uncle. That's not the case with a lot of black families. I was fortunate enough to grow up with a black father who was an attorney, and I am proud to follow his footsteps. But there is a lack thereof.
Of the more than 1.1 million lawyers currently licensed to practice law in the United States, only about 4.9% of all those attorneys are African American.
Amazing.
Which means that you could fill over 21 Arrowhead stadiums here in Kansas City with all the white attorneys in the United States. But if you put every black lawyer in America in Arrowhead Stadium, you'd have about 40,000 seats left over.
Well, you know, and I'll cut in. The obvious juxtaposition is, you know, flip the side. Look at the prisons, you know, that those are obviously a majority of black men. You know, I'd love to get some of those guys out of prison and get them into law school, to be honest with you. In fact, if I am convinced that if we had more black attorneys, there would be far less black men and women in prison. There's no doubt.
Well, and the issue manifests itself, for example, in Ferguson, Missouri. There was a recent Rasmussen poll polling residents of Ferguson. 84% of black voters after Ferguson, Missouri, consider the American justice system unfair to black and Hispanic America. Now, how that problem manifests itself was very clearly detailed by Michelle Alexander in her quintessential book on race inequality in the country, The New Jim Crow. And for instance, some of the ideas that she made sure people were aware is that one in every three young African-American males is currently under the control of the criminal justice system, in prison, in jail, on probation, or on parole. More
That's
than
amazing.
That, blacks and Latinos compose three out of four of all those in prison for drug offenses, despite the fact that the majority of illegal drug users are white. So what you're saying about judicial outcomes and inequality in the country seems to manifest itself very largely within the judicial system itself.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we call ourselves lawyers, but what we do is we represent our clients. And, you know, and I don't want to turn this into a white side, black side, but this is from my personal experience as a young attorney and certainly as a law student. I can relate to black men. I have a partner I'm sitting across from who is a white man. I find that I relate to black men slightly better than my white partner, and I think that's reasonable. You know, if we had more black attorneys, more black judges, I think that that representation would seep into actually understanding and relating more to some of these kids. You know, I can guarantee you this. A white kid that gets pulled over for a dime bag of weed that's got a lawyer in the family is going to have a much easier road to toe than the black kid that gets pulled over with a dime bag of weed that does not. That's the reality. And I don't want to chalk it up to racism and profiling. It's understanding. It's a resource. Okay, and black lawyers is a tremendous resource, and it's one that's lacking. It's one that needs to be filled.
But you'd have to agree that when literally a third of our government system, our judicial branch, representing the balance and equality under the law in the United States, is lacking in the diversity that's represented in the rest of the population, that has to have profound implications towards the way people feel about their lives.
Absolutely. And you said it. I mean, it's a third of our government, and it's woefully underrepresented by a tremendous sector of our society, black men and women. That's all there is to it. Again, you know, listen, I went to law school, and I was in a class with 150 individuals, okay? A lot of white girls, a lot of black boys, or excuse me, a lot of white boys. I remember two brothers, and I remember three sisters, okay? And I have not kept track with them, and they have not kept track with me. It's a very, very, very small fraternity or sorority, however you choose to look at it, and it's weakened because of that. You know, and I'll say this, and I don't mean to diminish anyone's ability and skill and technique out there, but I will say that I happen to be one of, what, maybe 50, 60 black plaintiff's attorneys here in Kansas City, and I haven't found myself in a restaurant coalescing with those individuals yet. You know, we need more in order to generate more. And right now, we have a very, very thin basis of black attorneys, black representation, and frankly, black understanding when it comes to the judicial product.
I think what's perhaps most alarming is the relatively recent history of integration with the legal system. In particular, and this is a historic fact, racial minorities were barred from practicing law for most of American history.
Well, let me cut you. I got a better one. Okay, and this is a lot of people would tell me this like I didn't know it, or they would say it with this great source of pride. But I have often heard, you know, Malik, your father was the first black partner in Kansas City. And I often reply, he's very proud of that, but he also sees it as a very dubious distinction. When was that? What, 1985? 1990. A highly skilled, highly qualified, good-looking man, I would say, that dresses well and certainly does his job well. People expect, you know, us to jump up and down. That's not a good thing. It's a bad thing. You know, it is. And he also is the guy that started the diversity initiative. You know, why did it take till 1990? I'm certain. I would submit to you that there was probably a black man or black woman out there that was a superior attorney to my father that deserved that status long before he did. So, you know, we obviously, the point of that is we have not come that far. We have come a long way, but not that far. We've got a long way to go.
Well, let's focus that national problem a little bit more on Kansas City or a little bit more on Missouri. In Missouri, racial minorities represent 16% of our population, but only about 5.9% of all practicing attorneys in the state of Missouri. Mm-hmm. And as of 2013 in Kansas City, we had about 5,036 lawyers that were in good standing with the bar, but only 52 black lawyers in the top 40 law firms in this city.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you mentioned the Kansas City Metropolitan Bar Association's diversity action plans. Those were started by your father, Sly James, when he was the president of the KCMBA. Is that right?
I believe so. That's correct.
Okay. And so during that first phase from 2004 to 2008, that plan proved to be fundamentally successful. The number of attorneys of color increased from 71 to 103, at the partnership level from 16 to 24. And of that percentage, the number of African Americans in the participating firms increased from 29 to 52. But those are still very low numbers.
Absolutely.
And I think it's low largely because it's a certain number of participating law firms. Since then, from 2009 to 2014, the Diversity Action Plan kind of kicked itself off again. But what do you see as local solutions to this very national problem?
A local solution. Well, that's a tough question, Brian. One thing that I do, in fact, I was doing it today. I was speaking to a young lady by the name of Jakeisha. I met her when I was giving a speech at Everest College. And I even said in speech, listen, if anyone out there is interested in becoming an attorney, you come up here and talk to me, I'll give you my card. I would expect that more attorneys, not black attorneys, but attorneys, okay? If you happen to be black, great. More attorneys need to go out there and find these people, be able to recognize talent, be able to recognize initiative, and say, hey, listen, what are you thinking about doing? Because you might make a fine attorney. A lot of these people I speak to, they don't even really know what it takes to become an attorney. And then after you talk to them for 30 minutes, they find themselves saying, whoa, that's me. I was like, yeah, of course it's you. It's a lot of people. But you know what? I would not be an attorney, and I'm a pretty hard-headed cat. I wouldn't be an attorney if it weren't for me watching my father. And to be honest with you, watching him for several years, it kind of scared me away from the concept of being an attorney. I saw him working his butt off. He was tough. He was working at 3 o'clock in the morning. But I realized that I can do this. My dad did it. He had a hard road, but that's not what he'd come home and talk about. He came home and talked about what it takes to be a good attorney.
The Brennan Center for Justice, which has studied this problem for a long time, focused on Missouri. They usually do a state-by-state analysis, but one of the problems Missouri's been criticized for is one of the causes of this issue was that we have a so-called elite system for appointing judges. It's called the Missouri Plan, and it's a appointed system that our judges aren't first elected. Now, the Brennan Center's criticism was that there's really no evidence that an elective system as a paired compared to an appointive system does any better as far as creating diversity.
Mm-hmm.
But Missouri is unlike a lot of other states where our judiciary, our bar, our bench is actually similar to the percentage of minorities in our population.
Right.
Another cause that folks have pointed out is that in 2012, this is one of the more recent statistics, that not only are African American scores on the SAT far below scores for white and Asian Americans, but those scores trail the SAT scores of every other major ethnic group in the United States, which means that if you're going to admit a proportionate amount of African Americans to the profession as a representative in the population, you risk admitting folks who may be so-called underqualified.
Well, yeah, that's if you work backwards. But right now, if you basically draw a line in the sand, you say, listen, okay, I don't expect to go back retroactively and change people's minds and change poor education. What I mean to do now is recognize what we have going on here. I would submit to you that those poor SAT scores do not come from a lack of intellect. It comes from a lack of desire. What am I taking this SAT for? I'm not going to college. I'm not going to law school. I'm going to go down the street and I'm going to get the money I can make now so I can take care of what I need to take care of. If we, like we mentioned a couple minutes ago, start grabbing some of these kids up, follow some of these kids that are showing some promise at a young age, recognize that we need more representation, not only in law, but in medicine and other key fields, find them and say, listen, I recognize that you have what it takes. I also recognize that we have a lack of people like you. I'm going to create a system that makes sure that you find yourself with the option of going to law school or med school. If you don't, cool.
Well, and it seems that you have to start fairly early.
Absolutely.
It seems that the earliest possible stage, kindergarten, people need to be thinking, hey, this is
earlier
a realistic.
Than that, 10 years ago, kindergarten, generations ago, kindergarten. Absolutely. It's not something that, listen, I've got a 4-year-old son. I would expect him to actually be able to get on this radio show and start talking about the difference. It's not something that we're going to be able to see empirical and quantifiable changes here in the next 3-4 years. It's something that you basically have to create a whole new generation of folks that say, listen, no. I have just the opportunity and just the chance that you do.
How do you think, though, you overcome that distrust? I mean, that poll is very chilling. 84% of black voters in this country consider the American justice system unfair to black and Hispanic Americans. And more than that, African Americans with law, medicine, and other professional degrees earn 52% as much money as their white counterparts.
Well, you know, and I don't want to dilute what you're saying, but how do you overcome that? I'll give you my personal experience. It happens with you. First of all, it's not about, hey, I'm black, I'm white, I'm in between. No, this is what I want out of life. And do I recognize that there's going to be some hard roads? I would submit that if you're too tall, you're going to catch crap. If you're too white, you're going to catch crap. If you're black, you're going to catch crap. If you're female, there's a good reason for everyone to try to put their foot on your neck. Get over it. Okay, this is about people understanding a need for legal representation. And quite frankly, more brothers and sisters, I'm sure that they can look up and see the situation and see the need for them to honestly care about the concept of becoming an attorney. However, that's not it. You also have to have this nice, pretty open door of a law school and people that are willing to give that education to these folks. And those are the ones that need to go out and say, hey, listen, these doors have been open for 50 years, and I've noticed over the 50 years that we have had not enough black applicants. That's my job to go out and get them. I'm talking about the chancellors and the deans and the law professors at UMKC and other law schools in town. Go out on a recruiting trip. Go talk to these teachers in high schools and grade schools. Find out these people that are writing and speaking very well, and create a system and a road that'll get them where they need to be.
I was impressed. I found out fairly recently one of the proposed solutions with at least the need of diversity in the profession was that federal district courts with greater representation, black judges and black prosecutors are less likely to sentence defendants to prison. And as the proportion of black prosecutors rises, the disparity between black and white imprisonment basically vanishes. Now, again, overcoming that trust issue, especially in light of, say, Ferguson, Missouri, what we've seen in the Northeast, how do we coax more African-American attorneys to want to choose the field of prosecutor, the profession of prosecutor?
Well, then that's just, you have to get more. You have to get more. You know, a lot of people think, oh, okay, what kind of field of law am I going to go to? Is it going to be criminal or med-mal? There are hundreds of fields of law that you can go into. Well, you're only going to touch all those different niches and facets of law if you have a lot more attorneys. You know, right now there are so few black attorneys, they realize that there is a particular place that they can go where they can establish success, where they can actually advance and not feel like they are behind the black ball, pardon the pun. Very few. But that's why if you get more, you keep showing prowess, you keep showing excellence, you keep showing the ability to do the job. I'll say this, and I'll cut myself off. When I was growing up, I was talking to my father about what it's like to be a lawyer, what it's like to be a black man. And he said, boy, let me tell you, you got three types of lawyers, okay? You got lawyers who are black lawyers, and lawyers who simply happen to be black. And he went through all of distinctions of each. And at the very end of it, I realized that I simply wanted to be a very good attorney who happened to be black, who happened to be tall, who happened to be heavy, whatever. I just want to be a good attorney who happens to possess other qualities that really don't matter. So I want to say out there right now, this isn't about becoming a black lawyer so you can go out and you can profess your blackness and wave the flag. No, this is about becoming someone that is in a very, very important profession, that has a very, very important purpose, that has a huge, huge ocean of people that are underrepresented. And I'll say to you out there listening right now, if you happen to be black, African American, whichever you prefer, would you feel safer if you had a lawyer in your family? I think you would. Well, we got too many families out there that do not have lawyers in the family, and that's what we need to change.
Well, that is at the core what this problem manifests itself to be, and that's if you don't have some mentality about the need for a lawyer, let's say with a traffic ticket or some other big problem, that traffic ticket goes unpaid, potentially becomes a warrant. That warrant becomes some sort of roadblock from your being able to find or obtain gainful employment, and that allows this cycle to sort of perpetuate itself.
Absolutely.
I mean, I see this as a very local problem. And what I have been concerned about, particularly in my limited experience as an attorney, is what seems like a lack of information out there about, frankly, what are our rights?
Yeah.
What are the rights of folks generally, and how do you go about asserting those rights? And it's not just the situation of driving while black. We see it in the employment context.
Oh, man. Every day.
And that's really what I think we should focus some time and attention to is employment discrimination.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, and actually, we can be honest because, you know, we're very good friends. But how many times have we sat in the office? And Brian, I'll say it to everyone. You're a fantastic attorney. You're brilliant. But we'll get a black client that has an employment discrimination issue. And I'll be honest with you. The fact that I can relate, the fact that I can experience that, and the fact that I've come from that, it allows me to be able to listen to certain things, to suggest certain things, and to say certain things. I don't want to say cross lines, but I can certainly blur lines that a lot of attorneys may find themselves hit by. You know, we have this term that we say in the office, working while black. You know, we'll get a call about someone that says, hey, listen, you know, I've got this traffic ticket and I've got to get this, but, you know, I found myself going to work. And they tell this long story that ends up turning out to be a potential employment claim. You know, and the fact is, and I'm convinced, as I look at my partner, I say, well, how does this happen? How do these employers actually think they can get away with it? Well, because the people that they're subjugating, the people that they're harassing, the people that they're discriminating are the very people that have a distrust inherently for attorneys, that have a lack of representation when it comes to attorneys, and simply don't feel like an attorney is going to do them any good. That all has to change.
I think one area of education that's sorely needed is making sure folks understand the difference between outright employment discrimination, where let's say you're called an awful name blatantly to your face, mm-hmm. compared to pretextual discrimination, where something that seems like it's a normal situation is used as a pretext mm-hmm. for employment discrimination. And that could be, hey, we're going to enforce the hair code the uniform code.
Or here's the one we get a lot is, well, your communication skills. We have a problem with your communication skills. And it's odd because the communication skills, you would think, would be on main display during the application and orientation process. But as these individuals work, it basically means is we don't like the way you talk or you talk loud. And a lot of cases is you talk while white people are around, and that bothers us. You know, that's a typical working while black issue. That's not a legal term, folks, but it's just something that's been smacking us in the face every single day as we try to do our job.
A question, or maybe a line of criticism about diversity action plans, and I want you to address this because I've heard it now a few times more recently, is that diversity action plans tend to suck out a lot of the black talent from those fields like prosecuting attorney or mm-hmm. from fields where you might be more on the plaintiff's side compared to representing the Walmarts of the world.
Well, let me say this, Brian. Diversity action plan. What do you think is going to produce better attorneys who happen to be black? A diversity action plan or a bunch of brothers and sisters out there who want to grow up and be attorneys? I mean, that's the diversity action plan, okay? That it is. I mean, I don't care where you're coming from. And, folks, I'm honest to tell you, I grew up with a single mother. I grew up poor as heck. I grew up moving to about 15, 16 different apartments before the age of 7, been in 6, 7 different grade schools before the age of 10. And so I know what it's like to be transient. I know what it's like to be poor. And I know what it's like to look around and think that we're never going to McDonald's to get the Happy Meal. Here I am today. It's a little late, the hard road, but who cares? I'm qualified and I've got a law degree and I'm here talking to you. So we need more brothers and sisters that say, no, 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 no. Instead of having to go look for help, instead of foregoing help, instead of being screwed over, why don't I put it down? Why don't I go to school? Why don't I take some control and then spread it out?
Again, I go back to Texas, 1950. That's the year, until 1950, Texas denied African Americans access to the state's law schools. Mm. This is a problem that I think has had this lagging effect. 50 years ago, in the scheme of human life, is pretty close.
Well, let me give you this one, too. Check this out, and tell me if I'm wrong. UMKC Law School was actually built as a physical fortification to separate black neighborhood from the white neighborhood. Now, if that doesn't make you want to put on a certain tie and go kick down the door to law school and change it up, I don't know what does. It certainly is not an effort to do that today. I've gone to UMKC filled with great people. The only problem I have with it is there are not enough brothers and sisters up there shaking it up. We must.
Well, there was sort of a glimmer of hope in another study that was dealing with trends about black professionals, but particularly black professionals mm-hmm. in the law, that showed that blacks compared with similar situated whites consistently choose fields directly addressing social and racial inequalities. Those fields are education, mm-hmm. social work, community and nonprofit organizing, or government and nonprofit law practices rather than corporate law. Now, that's an exciting, I think, when you're looking at law as a balance, as a true way to get rid of inequality, that's an exciting trend. So how do we pump that up?
Well, first I want to clarify that. I'm glad you broke that out because a lot of people will look at those figures and say, well, see, you know, we get these black attorneys and they don't make as much money. No, 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 no. They choose. not to make as much money. They choose to go into areas where, you know what, no, okay, I had support when I went into school and I'm going to give it back. So they have the opportunity to make a lot more money, but they do what they like to do. So I wanted to get that out of the way first. And to follow up with that, you know, I'm sorry, what was your question again?
So just generally, how do we capitalize on that trend? How do we focus more folks on understanding the dire need of diversifying the legal profession?
Well, you know, here's what I would do. If I were in control of this Sim City, as it were, I would take the top 5, 6, 7 law firms in town, okay? And I would have them devote a particular person or a department that says, listen, okay, if we are really, really meaning what we say, if we want to put our money where our mouth is, we need to recognize a need for more minority attorneys. It's on us. We have a lot of money. We have all the resources. We have all the training. Let's go find 6, 7, 8, 15, 20. Pick out a number. Let's go give them some scholarships. Call it the Hush Blackwell Scholarship. Call it the Lathrop Engage Scholarship. Go get them. Have them compete. Let them rock. See if it works. And ultimately, what you are doing is you are investing and making something better. I guarantee you, if you have more black attorneys, you're going to have less crime. You're going to have less mocked up systems. You're going to have more understanding. You're going to have blurred lines of racism and distinction that currently exist very, very prevalently down the line of truce. You know, listen, right now in the legal community, we have a lot of white attorneys. We have very few black attorneys. We have a lot of white people that have claims and are potential clients. We got a lot of brothers and sisters that have the same. There is a huge imbalance. And right now what happens is we have a lot of, and there again, a lot of my friends happen to be white, okay? And they happen to be attorneys, and they're doing great jobs. Those are the people that are being called upon to take care of the service, the needs of all communities, okay?
In my idealized view of Kansas City, I have this sort of hope that someday we can see this system of maybe call it community lawyering, where you have 1 to 2 attorneys for every neighborhood that exists in the city. And each of those attorneys acts basically as the philosopher king or philosopher queen of that neighborhood, a true mandarin in the sense that that person's there standing up to resolve conflicts but address those needs. And I feel like we're not too far from that future in Kansas City, but there's just that severe distrust, especially in a community that lacks lawyers.
And I'm going to keep it real, too. It's not just distrust, okay? It's harder. It's harder for black men and women to do it. And I'm not going to say, but the reality is this. There are more single homes in the black community. There are more pitfalls that happen to befall. I don't care if it's higher car insurance. I don't care if it's lower wages. There are a lot of things that black people face that some other people may not, okay? That makes it a little more difficult in some cases and scenarios. I'm not saying it's all the way across the board. And there are white folks out in Johnson County that have things that plague them that make it harder for them. I'm simply saying that there seems to be a pretty big concentration of people east of Truce that have a harder way of life. So it's harder to grow up thinking, oh, I'll invest 7 years in school, all the money it takes just to come out clean on the other side. I want to say I recognize that, but it ain't good enough excuse as far as I'm concerned.
Well, do you take on any mentees right now? Are you a mentor for anyone?
I don't like to use the word mentor because I'm just a guy still trying to make life make sense. But I do have some guys and gals that I talk to on a daily basis. I happen to think that I'm pretty darn good at shaking you up and making you think that you have no good reasons not to consider law school. So, yeah, bring it on. Anyone who ever wants to talk to me can get a hold of me at the Sly James Firm. You can get on my website. You can look me up on LinkedIn. I don't care what it takes. Just don't knock on my door without asking. But I'll help you out in any way I can, and I'll scare you, and I'll do my best to convince you.
Well, so I look to that relatively recent history, and I see a lot of hope because things are getting better. I see a lot of encouragement in the fact that while progress has been slow, it has been steady. And I think we had about 2 to 3 decades ago where 2% of our nation's attorneys were African American, and now we're up to 4.9, and that doesn't seem that encouraging, but at least it's better than 2. So I'm excited to see where things are going, but I know we have a long way to get there, and it's going to take young attorneys like folks like us to bridge that divide.
And let me say this to everybody. Law school's a lot easier than people try to make it seem.
Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening. Radioactive Magazine, KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio.
Thanks, guys.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a presentation of KKFI 90.1 FM in Kansas City. Radioactive Magazine provides a forum for activist groups and activists in the greater Kansas City area. If you would like to propose interviews, contribute commentaries, event notifications, etc. to Radioactive Magazine, call Dan Connolly at 816-217-5875. Thank you for listening.